This is an extract from the Nature podcast.
Historically, the ways that nations have often reduced poverty has meant more emissions. Bad news for the climate, but ending poverty is an important goal. So that begs the question, is it possible to end poverty without making climate change worse? Well, a new analysis in Nature tries to model the relationship between emissions and wealth. Reporter Alex Lethbridge is here with more.
With COP28 underway, climate change is on everybody's lips. And rightly so. It's one of the biggest problems facing humanity, which is why taking action to combat climate change is one of the UN's key objectives, part of their Sustainable Development Goals. To tackle this, we need to reduce our emissions. But at the same time, the UN, and humanity more broadly, have a lot of other goals. For example, more than 10% of the global population is still living in extreme poverty, defined as surviving on less than $2.15 a day. This too is an urgent problem, and one that could be tackled by economic growth.
Historically speaking, if we were to paint a really wide stroke, there has been a tight relationship between economic growth and greenhouse gas emissions. So that is, when economies have grown, in general, so have their emissions.
This is Daniel Mahler, an economist at the World Bank. And with such a relationship between emissions and economic growth, does this mean that tackling both extreme poverty and climate change is impossible?
But there are important country differences beyond this general pattern. There are countries that have managed to essentially de-link economic growth and greenhouse gas emissions, but there are also countries where greenhouse gas emissions have grown even faster than economic growth.
All right, so there's some complexity here. Economic growth doesn't have to mean increased emissions. So to untangle this, Daniel and the team from the World Bank have developed a model to simulate potential futures where countries across the globe have alleviated extreme poverty, meaning that only 3% of people are living on less than $2.15 by 2050. But to know how the future could play out, we must look to how we've done it so far.
So we first tried to calculate how much all countries that currently have poverty as defined by this international poverty line, how much they would need to grow their economies to alleviate poverty.
In essence, if countries didn't do anything different, how much economic growth and attached emissions would it require for them to reduce the number of people living in extreme poverty below that 3%, which is a very different challenge depending on where you are.
Most of the global extreme poor today live in sub-Saharan Africa, more than half, perhaps two-thirds, and the remaining are primarily in South Asia, but also in countries around the world that often are in conflict or in other sort of dire situations. For the typical country in sub-Saharan Africa, the economy we need to triple, we estimate, for them to end extreme poverty.
Now, a tripling of the economy might sound like a huge step up and therefore a big increase in terms of emissions. But Daniel and the team found that this wasn't really the case.
Yet given that these countries tend to emit so little at a global scale, even if their emissions were to triple for them to end extreme poverty, it would not make a very large dent to global emissions. And that's why we find that total impacts of ending extreme poverty globally do not add up to more than 5% of global emissions.
5% of global emissions would be less than half of the emissions produced by road transport. You know, things like cars, trucks and whatnot. And it's a number that didn't really surprise Kate Rickey, a researcher of climate sustainability.
The baseline result doesn't surprise me in that the 5% is low in terms of annual emissions, because even if it's a lot of people that are in extreme poverty and we're developing these economies in order to lift them out of extreme poverty, they're still emitting very little because they're consuming very little compared to most people in the world.
As Daniel said, this model used past relationships between economic growth and emissions to simulate futures. Helpful? Yes. But it's hard to accurately predict the future. But one thing that we do know, unfortunately, is that climate change will continue to affect everyone. But what could that mean for alleviating extreme poverty?
Difficulties producing food, difficulties with heat waves and tropical storms are always going to be cutting into that progress, that development progress, right? If we don't fix the climate risk problem, it's going to become harder and harder and harder over time to see substantial development gains. And they couldn't account for that in this model because it just, there's so much uncertainty around those effects, but there's an abundance of evidence that those effects exist.
But in the future, our technology may also get better. So one optimistic yet plausible alternative scenario that Daniel and the team modelled asked, what if these countries manage to replicate the best performers in terms of energy efficiency and decarbonisation? Or in other words, what if these countries can grow their economies while matching the rate of technological advancement seen in the best performers? And they found that instead of a 5% increase in global emissions, it would go up by just over 0.5%.
I was actually surprised by the results of the alternative scenarios. You don't need some magic solution that we haven't thought of yet. And it has very cool implications in terms of how can we make development policy and climate policy work together in these situations.
The fact that alleviating global extreme poverty by 2050 only increases emissions by 5% or less highlights how 95% or more of emissions are likely going to come from higher income, more developed countries. And for a long time, there's been a push to get these high income countries to fund development in lower income countries that are less responsible for climate change, which could be funding in a way to avoid many of the possible emissions and get that 5% even lower. But more needs to be done.
High income countries already aren't meeting their pledges. So there's this commitment that high income countries made to provide 0.7% of national income to development in low income countries. And they're way below the bar there. And also there's this commitment for high income countries to donate $100 billion per year to climate finance. We're also way below the bar there. You could think of it in terms of how can resources be increased so that high-income countries are meeting their obligations, and then how can they be best deployed so that we can meet these objectives, both important objectives to reduce climate-related risks and to lift other humans out of poverty. How can we reach these goals in a synergistic way?
That was Catherine Rickey from the University of California, San Diego in the US. You also heard from Daniel Mahler from the World Bank based in Washington, DC, also in the US. For more on that story and Nature's COP28 coverage, check out the show notes for some links.